Reset Rebel. It's the Reset Rebel. It's the Reset Rebel. It's the Reset Rebel. Coming to you every day.
Welcome back to the Ray of Light radio show with me, Jo Yule, here on The Reset Rebel and here on Open Lab. We are collaborating once again for our special series of interviews for the Ray of Light Awards, which are taking place later this month, right here in Ibiza. Spanish singer and songwriter Alex Serra is going to be giving a concert on the top of Delt Villa on May the 30th, and the tickets link is in our episode show notes. So, for episode 223, we have a Barcelona-born and based musician, but an artist who's also known as something of an explorer. He's lived in Ibiza, where I very first saw him play on a little farm down in the south of the island, and his debut album came after a journey of travels and self-discovery, and that's always evident in his lyricism and music, because it was in those months that he travelled and crafted his art, but also his own unique musical family. Alex Serra, welcome to The Reset Rebel.
Thank you. Happy to be here. That's a beautiful introduction.
So nice to see your face again. And as I said, I saw you playing a long, long time ago and down on that little farm, Tierra Iris, quite a few years ago now. So it's good to see you back here and ready to play in Ibiza at the end of the month. Are you looking forward to that?
I'm very much looking forward to that because Ibiza is in my heart, and I used to live there in Tierra Iris where you mentioned, and it's been almost a couple of years since we don't live there anymore, so I'm very happy to go back, see the family, see the friends, and play for everyone. Yeah, always amazing to do that.
Do you feel more or less connected to the earth now you're not living on that beautiful farm?
More or less connected to the earth? That's a good question. Definitely, Ibiza is amazing in terms of that, in terms of nature and feeling connected. But as well, where I'm living now, I'm living in close to Sitges in south of Barcelona. And there's also like beautiful nature here. And so I feel connected still, but I miss the island for sure.
I was going to say, it's not quite the same as just wandering out into the garden in the morning and taking a fresh orange off the tree and some rocket out of the garden. It's not, directly comparable, I guess. It's a different lifestyle. I love Sitges, though. It's beautiful there. I've been many times.
No, but I live up in the mountain and we do have a garden and we're like surrounded by forests. So still in nature.
I mean, I think music was the way that you learned to express yourself. And I think that's, you know, transformed the way that you show up in the world. How did it all begin for you? And what did, you know, kind of learning and crafting music sort of change for you in that way?
Well, music has been like my path of transformation, because I've always been very introverted. In my childhood, I was very shy. And it took me like a long time to really like go for it with the music. Like I was 27 when I really decided, you know, I gotta go for this, you know, otherwise my life is gonna pass and I'm gonna regret it. So it took me a long time to really decide to go for the music. But yeah, once I decided, everything like went exponential, you know, everything started to synchronize, and I started meeting incredible artists that inspired me so much. And you mentioned this journey that I did in 2012. That was like the beginning for me of transformation. I was coming from like my whole life of being so introverted and seeing that, you know, I only have one life. And I decided to go travel the world and I started connecting with amazing people that inspired me to go for the music and to believe in myself and to share my own stories. So now it's like I don't see life without music. It's impossible, you know. It's my way of expressing. I think I'm super sensitive and I feel everything. And so I feel like the world that we live in, sometimes it's quite violent in the way it expresses. And humans are interesting creatures. I feel like if you don't have all the information as I felt I didn't have when I was growing up, you know, I felt like I was in a strange world and I felt like humans are behaving very strangely and I didn't understand and I didn't have tools to manage. So I guess that's why like I just like closed and went inside and tried to protect myself from the world. And but then slowly through exploring myself and through traveling, through meeting people, I started like maybe, you know, there's another way of looking at things and opening up to the world and looking at the world with different eyes, you know? And that allowed me to discover that definitely the world is dependent on how you see it. So it's very, it's infinite.
Beautiful. I think, you know, it's always very interesting to anticipate a trip and never really obviously know what's going to happen, you know, who you're going to meet or where the path will take you. And obviously, you know, that was a massively life-changing experience for you through Latin America, through South Africa, and obviously the connections that you made along the way. And I wonder, you know, you say you always think that we should be a little bit uncomfortable in life every day. I think I read that somewhere. I mean, how uncomfortable was that to begin with when you kind of left the familiar?
Wow, that was terrifying. I felt like, what am I doing, man? Because I had like I had a job, you know, everything was, I had a good life. Everything was stable. I had a beautiful relationship at that time, but I just needed a change. I needed to explore, and I decided to go for it. And it was terrifying because I didn't know if it was the right decision or if it was just like a selfish act, you know. But in the end, I understood that no, it was like just like this inner voice telling me, you know, there's so much to explore and so much to discover about yourself. So in the end, it was the right decision. But yeah, I was terrified, and that's why I say that it's good to be a little bit uncomfortable, because to face your uncomfortability is where you can grow and change, you know, and question yourself, is this where I want to be, or what do I really want, you know? And that's facing the discomfort.
What do you think your life would look like now if you hadn't listened to that voice?
I would probably be very sad. Yeah. But maybe I would try to just go with it and but I'd probably be very sad. Yeah, because I was already very sad. That's why I decided to change. So it would have been getting worse and worse.
What was at the root of that sadness, do you think? Like just knowing that there was more out there?
Just knowing that I am incredibly beautiful, but I don't know how to express it. You know, like I feel so shy and so jammed inside myself that, man, I'm wasting this life, you know. So that was the kind of like reasoning and the pressure that I was feeling to open up.
So music is expansion for you, clearly. It's a way that you grow and you reach, you know, millions and thousands of people. And that's, you know, probably quite a terrifying thought in itself at the beginning of, you know, being seen, I guess, and being witnessed. But, you know, when you look at your YouTube, for example, and I see you giving like a dance meditation and dancing freely, and I'm like, that doesn't look like an introvert.
Well, through,
which is wonderful.
Yeah, I mean, through experiencing over and over again that it's all right to express yourself, then you start losing the fear, no? And you start not taking yourself so seriously, you know. So, yeah, that's what I try to do now. It's just play, you know.
So what's the biggest discovery you made through those sort of travels around the world which led you to write and record the debut in 7 years ago in 2019?
The biggest discovery? I guess that I didn't think about this before, but I started looking at myself as like infinite, like an infinite being, that I'm not just Alex. I'm not just this body. I'm not just this accumulation of experiences. I'm like a wider look. And I started feeling myself as that. And that's what I try to express with my music, to remind myself, because it's a challenge to remember this in today's world, because everything points to that I am this finite thing that is here and is gonna at some point die, and I need to do so much before that happens. But behind all that, I started to see myself as an infinite creature of the universe, you know. So that was a big discovery.
An infinite creature. I like that. I think I'd like that on my epitaph, perhaps.
Yeah.
I think, you know, you've shaped your sound massively since you started out with Yannick Mayo as an African psychedelic pop project. I mean, describe that journey from meeting him and how that's kind of, you know, obviously changed things quite dramatically.
Well, that was literally like a turning point, because I was I decided to go to South Africa for some reason. I had like the calling of Africa, and I thought, let's start with South Africa. It feels like a good starting point. And immediately I met Yannick, this guy, my friend Yannick Mayer, and we became like super good friends. And when I met him, he was starting to, he had created like his own songs in his bedroom with just like a guitar, a microphone, and when I met him, he was starting to like share his songs, but he was a bit shy about it. And he told me one day, "Do you want to hear what I'm doing?" And he shared some headphones, and I put them on, and that moment for me was life changing, because I realized that, wow, you did this in your bedroom with just a guitar and a microphone. It was so expansive, like the sound, the textures, the dimensions that he created. And I was like, wow, I want to learn how to do this, you know, I want to do this. And he was, at the time, he was like learning how to also express himself and starting to play those songs live in front of people. He was very shy. And I had been traveling, you know, for a couple years, and I was in a super like anything is possible, life is beautiful, hippie moment of my life. So we became like a super good, you know, team, because we encourage each other to express and to learn and to, let's do it. This is beautiful. And so that's the energy that this project started with. And what happened is, he was looking for a band to form a band to start sharing these songs live. And we started connecting with a marimba band from the township of Cape Town. The townships are like districts outside of the city that are, you know, very, very poor. And it's, you know, like the conditions are very difficult to live in. And it's mainly Black people living there. And so the segregation and the cultural universe in Cape Town is mind-blowing. You know, there's a lot of tension, but at the same time, there's so much life and so much energy. And so we started to meet with these people in the townships, and we started to rehearse all together. And just by being there, I felt like I was inside a movie, you know. And I asked Yannick, can I be with you guys and follow you guys for a while? I want to document this process, because I was documenting all this journey as well. And he said, of course, stay with us. And I was with them for like a month. And after that, after going to rehearsals over and over and sometimes jamming with them, one day Yannick looked at me and he said, man, you should be part of the band as well. And I said, yeah, I think I should. And And so I decided to stay in Cape Town. And in the end, I stayed with them for 2 years. I lived in South Africa. And in those 2 years, you know, the band formed and we started playing shows and we started to grow organically, like playing bigger and bigger shows. And then by 2016, 2 years after that, we were able to do a tour in Europe. And that's when I came back home to Barcelona and I kind of like closed the loop after 4 years of being away. And I decided to stay home and say goodbye to the band for now and start, you know, focusing on my own music and doing my thing. No, it wasn't at all. Because, you know, there was so much love and so much power in that band. And they're still going. They're amazing. It's called Native Young. But it was the time, you know, for me. I needed to integrate all, because that was 4 years of incredible, like, experiences, like, on and on growth. And so I needed to, like, digest, you know. There was so much to integrate, and I needed that. And that was the process for me to, you know, start listening to myself. You know, what do I want to sing about? What stories do I want to share? And then slowly the song started to come for me.
I mean, where did that, you know, first kind of track, you know, that because it's developed in quite a sort of dubby way. That's like a real signature sound for you in terms of, you know, the collaborations and the relationships you've built with that. But that's very, you know, African infused, I would say, in some ways. And obviously, is it Toti Dub that you've obviously been working with, and he's become a big part of your life and your sound and your live performances? Obviously, you're going to be doing this weekend as well in Spain. And I mean, that's, talk us through that.
Yeah, well, you know, like, it's incredible, no? Because when you're open, life continuously wants to play. And then what happened to me is that I wrote like a collection of songs after all this journey. I arrived home, started composing and started producing as well in my bedroom with a laptop and a computer, just like, you know, my friend taught me that it was possible. And then after like a year of that, I had like a collection of songs and it was beautiful. And I felt though that they could grow, you know, they could grow and be more strong. So I started asking friends, you know, if they knew any, you know, producer or someone I could work with. And after, you know, a few friends, that one friend of ours, one friend in common with Toti, told me, yeah, you need to talk to my friend Toti. He's amazing. He makes incredible dub and reggae and beats. And so I called Toti and I invite him home and I showed him my songs. And he was like, wow, man, this is super beautiful. I would love to help you. But, you know, at the moment I'm doing this project. So maybe if we can wait a couple months, then I can like really focus on this. And so we decided to meet like a few months later and I went to his studio and it was like, well, let's play, no? And we decided to like jump into that universe and every song, you know, really like fine tune the elements, the atmospheres, the beats. And he was like the visionary in that sense to create this like dubby universe around it. And I'm so happy that happened because it's like, it's amazing. I've grown so much with Toti and still growing. And the beautiful thing is that after that, we became a band as well. So we started playing together those songs. We did another album and we continued to play together after many years now.
Do you see that kind of relationship evolving further in terms of the, you know, the development of that sound?
It's infinite. Yeah, definitely. Yes,
another
I can see that. I can see that because we're both so playful and we like to experiment with sound so much that it's like, okay, how do we do this song? We could do it this way or that way or that way. Or like, it's just a game, no? So I can definitely see it evolving. And yeah, we're actually now working on a third album. And it's very fresh. I really like it.
How many tracks have you got for that?
We got around 10 tracks for now. Yeah.
Will we be hearing some of those when you play in Ibiza at Delt Vila?
Possibly one or two.
Nice. I mean, that's going to be an immersive soundscape blending electronic and acoustic and obviously the ancestral influences. So I'm kind of, you know, really intrigued to see what that looks like in such a special place. Obviously, it's not very often that you get to play on the top of a World UNESCO heritage site. I think it's called the Baluarte de Santa Lucia, which is one of the fortified bastions forming part of the Renaissance walls. So it's kind of like, you know, a piece of architecture that was created to protect Ibiza from the pirates. So I'm wondering how that's going to kind of influence what you play for us that night.
Wow, definitely. Yeah, I'm very excited about the space. The space is everything really in the end, because you go to a place that carries an energy, you know, and this place definitely has something magical. I haven't seen it yet, but I've seen pictures. I know it's beautiful. So very, very excited.
I think, yeah, it's just that history of all of the kind of, you know, defensiveness, I guess, that's gone on there, and all the kind of imminent potential attacks that, you know, people will kind of experience that back then. As you said at the beginning, like, you're feeling that the world is a violent place and bad things can happen. But, you know, I think Ibiza doesn't bow down to that kind of feeling. It's very much a celebratory island that kind of, you know, you feel very protected in somehow, because everyone here is kind of, you know, here for the music mostly, or at least maybe discovered it because of that. So how would you, you know, how did you find Ibiza? What brought you here in the first instance?
I found Ibiza because after the pandemic in 2020, we got invited to play there in summer. And it was beautiful because I know it's my first time, we'd never been in Ibiza, but we went and played there and everybody was singing our songs. And our first album that just came out like less than a year ago. So it was an incredible experience because it was like, wow, this island in the middle of the ocean and people are resonating with what we do and how we do it and how we feel. So it was very instantly, it was like very obvious that there was a place to explore, no? And then after a few months, we got to play, I think the next year we got to play at Tierra Iris, actually, at the amphitheater. And we played a show with Nick Mulby, who's a dear brother. He's amazing.
Love Nick. He's amazing.
And it was so incredible because for me, Nick was like, you know, a top artist. And for me to play with him in that space was super, super special. And we were with Toti as well. They became good friends as well. So it was like a very beautiful energy. And the space filled up with people. And when we finished that show, it was like, we were looking around like, what is this? You know, what is this energy? Like, what's happening? And everyone was so happy, so joyful. And then Mati was the visionary in Tierra Iris. Like, he was around and we told him, what do we have to do to come live here? Like, we were with my wife because we were like looking for spaces. And he said, come whenever you want. This is your home. So we were in Barcelona at that time, and we literally 1 month after that, we were living in Tierra Iris. Because after COVID, we really realized that we need nature. It was so, so obvious. And that space was incredible. So,
and that's where you had a baby.
The baby we had later down the line, not, well, we had the baby in Ibiza, exactly, yeah. not in Tierra Iris, I mean, but not physically there, but in the island. Yeah. With that, yeah, with all that energy, yeah.
Beautiful. I mean, obviously you have taken some of the electronic influences, one might say, of the island with the remix from Feathered Sun, who's obviously here, you know, a lot of the time. But, you know, did you ever go out at all when you were here in Ibiza? Was that kind of electronic connection something that you, you know, how did you feel about it when you were kind of here on the island? I'm intrigued to hear your perspective on that.
I never went to like any of the big clubs or anything like this, but you know, every gathering that we go to, there's always like a mix between that more, you know, acoustic organic stuff and the electronics. Like, I think it's a beautiful combination if you learn how to use electronics in a way that becomes harmonious with the space. You know, sometimes I feel like those super huge clubs, I don't know, they make me a bit anxious. Like the energy around it, the party, it's a bit much for me. You know, so I like a bit more chilled. But I love electronics.
Yeah. Well, you have plenty of it. I mean, subtly in some of your music. And I think it's, you know, interesting how you've kind of used some of those tools of looping and textures and subtle beats and production layering to, you know, to create your own fusion, if you will, of that sound. But I wonder, is that coming into the next album or?
Electronics?
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Ooh.
Yeah.
In what way? Yeah.
Well, I love to explore different genres. So I play with electronics because they allow me to easily, you know, explore ideas, and it's like a playful mate to play with. I mean the computer, no, the origin of the electronics is to like go into the computer, create like scapes where I can like go into a trance. I think electronics have allowed me to explore the trance state, you know, to like put a beat on, let it play infinitely because it's a loop. And inside that space, just see what comes through, you know, and see what your voice, what wants to explore, what wants to be said. Then maybe a melody comes, and maybe in some time that melody turns into a lyric, and then maybe, you know, guitar will accompany. And it's like layers and layers and layers, and yeah, for this new album, there's definitely different genres and different uses of electronics in the songs. I don't know. You'll have to hear it.
Is that something that you've been playing with, you know, personally, or is that something that you have like a producer who, you know, you work with on that, or is it still very much a bedroom process in Sitges?
It starts in my bedroom of me playing around, starting to put the song together. And then once I feel that, you know, the feeling of it, the vibe of it is there, then I go to Toti and I'm like, Toti, I got this idea. Let's you know, let's make it big. And then he's amazing with that. You know, he's like, okay, let's see how this beat, I feel like, you know, we could use it, you know, this kick drop instead of this one. And maybe let's add this little loop here. And what about these textures? And then we start, you know, slowly recreating like the universe that ends up being the song, no?
Toti sounds like a legend.
And he's super funny, so.
It's always interesting to see how these kinds of relationships, you know, progress, I think. Like sometimes, you know, relationships and music, you know, they have a very finite length of time that they last, but some of them, you know, last a lifetime. And I feel like, yeah, he seems to be a very intrinsic part of your production outfit, as well as, you know, someone that you can play live with. So that's a beautiful thing. Incredible. I see that obviously medicinal, you know, medicine music is something you have as a little side project, as Ghetto Suave and obviously Mariposa. I love the picture on that website when I had a little look at it earlier of you guys completely butt naked in this incredible joyful moment on a trampoline. I was like, no, it can't be.
Oh, you found that. Wow.
I did. I was like, holy, holy moly. This guy's hilarious. I loved it.
Nice.
So medicinal music, is that, you know, something that's still like an undercurrent? Is that still evolving alongside the other music that you're crafting, or?
Yeah, I mean, like our last album, Trans Life, was, I feel very, very inspired by that. There's a lot of medicine music, I would say, there. In the sense of, yeah, songs that are more like mantras, you know, to be able to repeat and sing in group as well. It's just been like a natural exploration. I feel like from my first album, the travels that we did with our first album, the communities that we started meeting and the people that we started meeting, we begin to understand that there's like this network that is growing around the world, no? And there's a lot of communities joining and learning how to help each other out. And in that whole process, there's definitely a lot of healing and a lot of ceremony and coming together and going through the difficulty of evolving together. So definitely that's the medicine, and that comes through in my music. I really didn't expect it, to be honest, to sing things like this, but it just came naturally, and it came actually with my second album. I started singing more in Spanish, which before I've always sang in English, and I've always felt very shy to sing in Spanish. I guess because it brings me to my essence, no, to my childhood, to all the things that I had to go through, to my inwardness and my awkwardness. So my second album was like really challenging to put out, but it changed my life, because in the end I realized that I needed it so much, and definitely a lot of people have enjoyed it and gave me incredible feedback, and it allowed me to connect with South America as well, which was like a vision that I had. Maybe if I also sing in Spanish, it could also be a way to bridge the two continents. And my wife is from Argentina, so it was like a beautiful vision, and it ended up happening as well. So
I didn't expect to see that other string to your bow. I mean, it seems like you're a man of many different talents and projects and, yeah, visions, essentially. But I listened to those tracks there as well. And I love the medicine music. I think it's beautiful. And I think, you know, that's the title of the panel that I'm very happy to be moderating as part of the Ray of Light Awards, about, you know, whether music is the missing link in modern medicine. And I'd love to hear your thoughts on that, so I can have an idea of what's coming at the end of May when I'm on that panel with you. Looking forward to it.
I feel like music is like the closest to God for me, if not directly God, in the sense that it just proposes a space of listening without judgment, where you can listen to your emotions and express them freely, and maybe dance if you need to, move, you know. So it's a space of, literally, it's a space of togetherness. So there's nothing that can go wrong with music. It's quite incredible. It's just a loving space. Even if you don't enjoy it, because sometimes I've had shows where I felt so awkward because of the process of growing and learning how to share, that I felt like, oh, I don't want to be here, but I'm still on stage, you know. But even if that happens, it's perfect, because everyone present is receiving, you know, what needs to be received, and so it's always positive, it's always beautiful. So definitely we can call it medicine, we can call it many words, but it's definitely a space that harmonizes.
I'm glad you mentioned that, about that awkward moment when you're on stage or in the middle of that performative minute of your life where you're just kind of standing there a bit like the rabbit in the headlights going, you know, what am I doing here? Who am I to be standing here just doing what I'm doing right now? I mean, I don't know, like it's a very alien thought process that can pop up, I think, when you least expect it sometimes. So it's very intriguing that you've experienced that. And I wonder how how do you tackle that when that pops up for you, and how do you move beyond?
Yeah, I mean, that's why it took me so long to start sharing, because that was like my internal dialogue, is that, you know, people are judging you, you're not good enough, this is not for you, you're okay, but you know, like all kind of bullshit, you know. And it's difficult to be seen when you're going through that internal process. It's very difficult, but I feel it's the only way. The only way is through feeling that. And that's why I always encourage people to just do it, you know, because I don't see any other way. Because we all have this need to express, and as well, it's the most terrifying feeling to be seen, you know, especially in front of a lot of people, you know. But it's the most rewarding thing when you allow yourself to do it and to go through it. And sometimes it's, you know, sometimes it's amazing. Sometimes it's okay, but you know, I wasn't so comfortable, but still, it's always amazing. So my internal process now is, if there's moments of that, to just try to laugh at myself as quickly as possible, you know. Just laugh, because it doesn't make sense. So I try to be humorous about it.
I think that's the only way to deal with it. Yeah. It's your own head telling you that you're not good enough and you shouldn't be there, and like, you know, it's just a very alienating moment. But thank you for sharing that. I think lastly, like, just tell us about the music awards. I mean, like, you know, as you just said, this performance is a brave act for you in many ways, when you stand up there and you go through that process and you do, you know, what you set out to do. And I think it's hard for a lot of musicians. I don't think it's something that, you know, even just interviewing Sister Bliss from Faithless the other day, has had a 35, 40 year career. She has the same thing, the anxiety she feels before she was on the top of Del Villa the other night at the International Music Summit headlining. She said she was absolutely in pieces. And, you know, the moment she stops getting anxious, I guess, is the moment she stops caring. So that's really what it's all about, isn't it? It's the caring factor. And I think, you know, musicians sometimes maybe don't, you know, you'll never see that by watching somebody on stage. But I think it's a very much a, you know, it's a cover-up act to a degree. But what are you, who are you awarding in these Ray of Light Awards? What's the process and what's the plan?
I'm going to be in the music medicine panel with you.
With me?
Yeah. So I'm going to be participating in that. And then we're going to be playing at night. That's it. It's gonna be beautiful. I'm very excited. And I'm very excited to go with Toti. And there's also going to be some surprises that I can't say, but...
Now I understand. Can't say too much on this podcast. I think lastly then, the Icon Award every year at the International Music Summit is given to some electronic hero. If you had to give that out to your own personal choice, let's end there. Who would that be? Who's that person that's really inspired you along this journey more than any other?
If we go to the classics, I would have to say Bob Marley, obviously. Beautiful, beautiful music and message. More recent, I would have to say Lauryn Hill. I really love. And more recent even, do you know Daniel Caesar? He's a musician from Canada. Beautiful, beautiful music. Very soul. I love soul music, you know, soul and reggae and all that has to do with that. So
amazing. I will go and check him out. I've never heard of him. So it's always good to, you know, the algorithm doesn't really play the game in terms of introducing you to good new music. It's a lot of, you know, it's a lot out there, but finding it is another whole game in itself, if I'm honest.
Totally.
And I find that hard.
Totally.
Yeah. I just recently bought a vinyl player, and it opened up like a whole universe, because now I go to vinyl stores and I explore vinyls and I discover like music, you know, it's impossible to find unless you like take the time to go and listen. And it's a beautiful way to relating to music. I feel like we have everything at our disposal. It happens to me with movies as well, with Netflix, and everything is there, and I can't choose. I just like, I don't know what to choose. So it's good to have, like, you know, people cater and you know, this is a good movie or this is a good album. Of, I love going back to that a bit more analog kind of feel.
I think the physical touch and connection there as well is super important. I mean, you know, everything has changed in our own experience of consumption in all directions, you know, digitally, musically, you know, in a very, I think, audible sense. You know, being an audiophile has changed dramatically. Now everything's on your laptop, whereas before, you know, tapes or mini discs or CDs or any of these things that you could actually reach out and touch, like records, is, you know, I miss that sometimes. Makes me sound like a bit of a dinosaur, but, you know, I think I actually used to cut tape up when I was at university and when I was studying to be a journalist. You know, I was doing like a radio course, and, you know, that really was dinosaur-y, but it was fun and it was exciting and it was very, you know, hodgepodge, because you don't know really what you're stitching together until you listen back to it. But, you know, there's so much precision now. Everything's so precise. Everything has to be so perfect. And I don't think it was really like that back then.
I'm actually like, I'm having this process of going back to analog. I literally like bought like a video analog camera, and I'm recording everything with that, with tapes. And I want to get like a tape recorder now for cassettes and start like creating music with cassettes. I feel like there's something very, very interesting in that process, you know, the limiting process of having to use like this tape, and that's the amount of space that you got. And if you want to record, you re-record. And if you want to cut, you can cut. And exactly, you don't know if it's going to be precise, but it's part of the organicness. I love it.
For sure. And I love that video, lastly, that you posted about your, you know, the time in COVID with your partner, your wife now, you know, the magical kind of little moments that you guys had together. That felt like a little bit, yeah, kind of like a home video. So, yeah, I can see that is definitely a part of your passion. So thank you for making the time to catch up today. It's been...
thank you, Joanna.
Lovely
thank
to you meet you. Much. Sending love to Sitges.
Lots of love.
Reset Rebel. It's the Reset Rebel. It's the Reset Rebel. It's the Reset Rebel. To you every day.
Welcome back.